Welcome into the Ether, a podcast focusing on all things Ethereum, the leading blockchain for decentralized applications. I'm Eric Connor, your host and founder of ETHub, a decentralized information hub for Ethereum. Into the Ether features deep dives on topics with prominent guests in the community, as well as ETHub weekly recaps featuring Anthony Cesano. Hello, everyone. Today I have Robert Leshner, CEO of Compound. Compound is a decentralized application built on Ethereum, which allows users to borrow or lend Ether or other ERC-20 tokens. It has recently exploded in popularity with the open finance movement picking up, and personally, it's one of my favorite apps built on Ethereum. Thanks for joining me today, Robert.
Thanks, Eric. Excited to be here.
So can you talk a little bit first about just your background in general and how you kind of got started with Compound?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I started my career originally as an economist. I was a interest rate analyst at a bank and then a wealth management business. And along the way, I became interested in software. I came out to Silicon Valley and I started building technology with Jeff, my co-founder. This is our third company together. And at some point, Ethereum came out. And it was really the mashup of both of my passions, finance and programmability. And it really opened up a whole window of opportunity. And immediately, you know, I said, well, we have to build something in Ethereum. This is the most phenomenal platform to be able to program assets and to be able to add logic to money. And so, you know, in a lot of conversations with members of the community and, you know, myself, you know, I decided that we needed to build Compound, a protocol for interest rates.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I fully agree with everything you said. That's my background is actually finance as well, and I got interested in Ethereum pretty much the same reason you did. So that's pretty cool to hear. And to me, this kind of just came out of nowhere one day. I had seen you guys made an announcement, and I think you had some investment maybe from Coinbase, and then all of a sudden the app was kind of out there. How long did it take you to go from this idea to completion and being on mainnet?
Yeah, a long time, actually. So we originally started Compound in October of 2017. And we put a team together of some phenomenal engineers, and we just started testing the limits of Ethereum. Our first, you know, couple attempts at building an interest rate protocol were less successful. We had to essentially learn how to do math on a blockchain, which is different than, you know, doing math on a server in the cloud where there's almost unlimited computing resources. And, you know, we spent a lot of time just proving out the basic concepts of how Compound would work, simplifying the logic as much as possible, simplifying the computations as much as possible. And we came up with a couple, you know, really interesting, what I would call innovations in just the implementation. And, you know, from there, we wound up raising a small seed round. And we spent the next half a year or so, almost 9 months, just building, you know, not marketing, not celebrating, you know, anything besides just like attempting to build the very first version of the protocol. And we launched in September of 2018. It was a full year from conception to launch. And in that time, we built, you know, the on-chain protocol as well as a simple interface using a Web3 stack so that users can interact with the protocol with an Ethereum address hosted locally. And, you know, it was what we call, you know, version one.
Nice. That's great. Yeah. I mean, personally, one of my favorite things about you and your team is you kind of just mentioned it, but there, you don't hype it up much. You don't market it too much. You just kind of build it and, you know, prove it through your work. And it's a very cool app. And I think it's kind of just spread organically, which I like to see. I mean, obviously there was no ICO or anything like that, which usually puts a bad taste in people's mouth now. So it's cool that you guys just built it and got it out there and kept your heads down.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And that's a result of the fact that we think it takes a long time to build the right thing. It doesn't make sense to, you know, try to get the entire world to use a product until you feel like it does what you want it to do. And it's been, you know, a long period of just learning and improving for us.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot to learn and there's still many years ahead too of improving all this stuff, but it's cool to get a functioning app out there. And kind of how big is your team right now?
Right now, we're a team of 7 full-time employees and 2 contractors. We're expanding, we're adding one more member to our team in a few weeks. And, you know, all in, we're a team of 10, which is relatively small by, you know, many people's standards.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think that's a very good background of kind of how you got started and how Compound got started and where your team's at. So I'd love to now dive into the application itself. I think it's probably best to first start. I'm sure a lot of the listeners have heard about it or played around with it, but can you kind of start with just giving a basic high level overview of exactly what Compound is?
Absolutely. So Compound is a series of money markets for Ethereum assets. We support Ether, and we support 5 tokens, those tokens being MakerDAO's DAI stablecoin, Basic Attention Token, 0x, and Augur, in addition to WETH, which is Wrapped Ether. And the way that Compound works is we allow people to earn an interest rate when they supply liquidity, and we allow people to borrow from the protocol when they pay an interest rate. And the entire system is designed to be seamless and with as few variables as possible. So users are really only choosing which asset they want to supply and how much, or which asset they want to borrow and how much. And all of the other considerations, such as the interest rate or the duration or the collateral requirements, are handled by the protocol. So users don't really have to think. They can simply choose to earn income on the assets they already hold or to easily borrow an asset without really any other considerations. There's no counterparties that you interact with. There's no order books. There's no complicated systems. The simplicity is really the product.
That's cool. Yeah. And obviously this is a really core fundamental thing that's needed for a financial system, right? People creating a liquidity pool and borrowing and lending different assets and earning if they have extra and be able to lend if whatever they want to go do with that asset. So I think it's kind of a core component we need for this open finance movement. And, you know, obviously this is a decentralized application where people are putting assets into a pool and others are taking it out, and there's no kind of middleman in between. So obviously you need some kind of collateral requirement, right? If I want to go borrow, say, $1,000 worth of REP token from someone, there's no guarantees I'm going to pay that back if there's no collateral. And we see this concept in MakerDAO CDPs as well, where you need to keep like 150% collateralization ratio. Can you discuss a little bit the collateral requirements on Compound and how that ensures the safety of the system?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head in that, you know, we're still at a point in Ethereum where, you know, nobody's really built out identity systems and reputation and credit systems. And so borrowing really has to be based on collateral and making sure that, you know, you have more money at stake than what you've taken so that you don't just run away. The way Compound manages this is when you supply liquidity to the protocol, it becomes your collateral and your borrowing capacity. And so, you know, if I am a holder of Ether, you know, I can supply that to Compound and then use that as collateral to borrow a token, such as Augur, if I want to, you know, use the Augur protocol. And so the requirement in Compound is that you have to maintain 150% of the value of what you've borrowed. So if I want to borrow $1 worth of Augur, I just have to maintain $1.50 of assets inside the protocol.
Makes sense. Yeah. So very similar mechanism to what Maker's doing. And for now, you know, that's required those higher collateralization ratios, because like you mentioned, we don't have identity and stuff like that. And we're going to talk a little bit later in this episode about open finance, and we'll dive into those aspects and kind of what are needed in the future to build out this open finance protocol or ecosystem a little bit further. But, you know, you mentioned the collateralization ratio, and, you know, if you're putting in REP and you want to borrow DAI, for example, you need to post REP, obviously, and keep it. And if you slip below 150% collateralization, your position gets liquidated. So we kind of reached out on Twitter to ask some questions. And on this point, there seems to be, you know, I got a couple questions or general concerns about the lower liquidity assets. So for example, obviously we know that Ether and DAI as well are pretty liquid assets. So if someone is going to get liquidated, that's going to get sold on the market, and you're going to be able to fill that pretty well to cover their position. Something like REP, which is Augur's token, it might have lower liquidity. Are you at all concerned, or what are your thoughts on that if someone's posting a large amount of REP to borrow DAI and there's not enough liquidity to liquidate it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when we originally launched Compound, we anticipated that if the protocol ever had a large amount of assets, they would come from an extremely large number of users, and that a large number of users, you know, spreads out the risk of any one asset. If there's, you know, many users using Augur as collateral to borrow assets, you know, they're entering into these positions at different price points. They're entering into these positions with different risk tolerances as a user, and different considerations, and that, you know, there wouldn't be a concentration of risk. One of the things that's surprised us is that, you know, in the small amount of time since launching, the protocol has seen a huge amount of influx of Augur being used to borrow other assets. And, you know, it's actually exceeded our expectations. And, you know, we believe that it does, in a theoretical sense, increase some of the tail risk of the protocol. You know, the protocol is designed at this time to treat all assets as if they're the same quality of asset to be able to use as collateral. And so it's starting to sort of test the edges of, you know, what we anticipated. You know, there's still what I would call an extremely remote, you know, black swan edge case. You know, all of the borrowing in the protocol is excessively over-collateralized. You know, right now, you know, there's very few users at risk of liquidation, including, you know, some of our largest users. But, you know, it has concentrated risk a little bit more than we anticipated when we first launched the protocol.
Yeah, sometimes these things just kind of take off, right? And obviously, always kind of a word of caution. This is working great and it's out there and it's decentralized, but just like pretty much anything else on Ethereum, it's still kind of, you know, kind of in the discovery phase, and there's always a little bit of risk involved. And so if you're planning on putting thing into anything, that goes for Maker, that goes for Augur and Compound as well. Like, these are still kind of, we're still kind of testing the limits of all this software. Would you agree with that?
I completely, you know, and pretty much everything we do in pretty much every single blog post, we like to say that this is extremely experimental technology, that we're just learning as a community what the limits are. You know, all of this knowledge is going to be used when we build the second version of Compound, which, you know, maybe at the end of this show we can talk about. But, you know, this is all a learning exercise. And the first version, you know, is not going to be the final version.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny you mentioned, you know, the large rep posting of collateral, because one day I kind of looked at the pools and I got interested. There was a huge amount of rep out there, and the DAI lending rate was up to, I think it was like 12% or something like that. So that obviously piqued my interest, and I had dove into the chain and kind of traced some transaction. It looked like someone that has a very large amount of rep was posting it to then borrow DAI, or in some cases even ETH, but mainly DAI, to go buy ETH on their on a decentralized exchange and then send that ETH to a Maker CDP that they were trying to protect from liquidation. So it's kind of interesting how you can track these transactions and see how this, all these apps are interacting.
Well, I love the transparency of, you know, the Ethereum financial system. You know, I started my career on Wall Street in, you know, the midst of the liquidity crash of, you know, 2007 to 2010. And, you know, it was scary because there was so much opacity. No one knew what counterparties' positions were or what they held. You know, it was a scary time because it was, you know, not transparent. And, you know, when there's a stress scenario, you just assume the worst. You know, with Compound and all the other systems that are built on Ethereum, it's kind of the best of all worlds. You know, we're able to even have a conversation about, you know, specific accounts and their risk thresholds, which is magical. In a lot of ways, you know, I love that the community can basically examine and scrutinize the protocol and the risk of it in every way. That's just so novel.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's nothing hiding around the corner, that some kind of black swan event, right? It's all out there and we can all assess the risk because of that. So, you know, you talked a little bit about liquidity right there. And obviously the core functionality of Compound is to pool liquidity together. So there's a borrowing and a lending rate. And I see a lot of confusion online about this and how these rates are set. And I know you guys have, I've read the white paper, and there's a pretty complex mechanism that sets the lending and borrowing rates. Can you kind of walk us through that and exactly how these are determined?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a couple pieces that are at play. And this is not messaged as well as it could be. And this comes up a lot from our community. So it's great to always sort of, you know, explain exactly what the approach is. So the way the protocol works is it sets a borrowing interest rate. And this borrowing interest rate is based on supply and demand, which is essentially liquidity. When there's very little liquidity, which is a function of either really high borrowing demand or very little supply, interest rates are high. When there's a ton of liquidity, when nobody really wants to borrow and there's a ton of assets supplied, then interest rates are very low. And there's a line, it's basically a linear curve, in which the interest rates fluctuate based on the proportion of the market that's liquid. And so, you know, as borrowing demand goes up, interest rates go up. As liquidity declines, interest rates go up. And this is designed to create the right incentive structures. It's designed such that, you know, as liquidity becomes more scarce, it incentivizes more and more liquidity. You know, when interest rates go up, you know, people all around the, you know, Ethereum ecosystem say, oh, wow, I had no idea the interest rate was that. You know, I want to participate in it. And it's all about creating an alignment of incentives. And so the protocol sets a borrowing interest rate. This is the first interest rate that gets created, and it's solely based on supply and demand. The second piece of the interest rate mechanism is the passing of that interest to the suppliers of capital. And so this is done on a pro rata basis. When there's a very small number of borrowers and a very large number of suppliers of the asset, the protocol takes the interest from borrowers and essentially passes it to the suppliers of the asset. And so a small number of, you know, interest payers are spread across an extremely large amount of interest earners. And so the interest rate received is very low. It's basically just algebra, where there's an equality between two sides. And so this creates some, you know, visual discrepancies. You might see, oh, there's a borrowing rate of 5%, but a supply interest rate of, you know, 10 basis points. What's up with that? It's not like, you know, the interest is, you know, going anywhere. It's that it's just being spread over a very large amount of individuals who are supplying to the protocol.
That makes a lot of sense. I think that's a great way to put it. So just thinking about, there's obviously different sizes of the pools on both sides. So if one side's smaller, but they're paying more, you've got to disperse that to a larger pool on the other side, probably on the borrower side. I think that makes a lot of sense. And that's why we see these larger spreads. Is that right? Like right now, I believe on DAI, the borrowing rate's like 9.75% and the lending rate's 3%. Does that explain that?
Yeah, there's basically three times as much supply as there is borrowing right now. If that goes, you know, if there's more supply that comes in, if there's five times as much supply as there is borrowing, the ratio will get even more disjointed.
Makes sense. You know, and one of the things I've noticed at times, most of the rates have settled very low. I think REP is maybe 0.1% or lower. I believe Ether is around like 0.35% or so. Do you see any way? I mean, obviously it's tough because like you just said, it's all automatically driven off a mechanism which sees how much is in the pool on both sides. But do you kind of see any way to boost these rates up, or do we need to wait for kind of identity and risk-based systems to come online first?
Yeah, I think, first of all, that's a great question. You know, we think of Compound as, you know, the closest thing to a risk-free rate, you know, in the traditional sense that just means there's no credit risk and, you know, that ideally it's liquid. And so it should be theoretically the lowest interest rate available. You know, there will be higher interest rates available, especially in the Ethereum ecosystem, when there's more risks that you can take, when you can take credit risk, you know, where you're lending to an individual based on their reputation. That's a great risk that you get compensated for. You know, you can take more risk in terms of duration or liquidity, you know, where if you're extending a loan for, you know, a month or a year, you know, you're taking more risk than if you're extending it for an indeterminate or extremely short amount of time. And so Compound always should be the lowest interest rate. And I think this is actually a good thing because it really represents the, you know, the risk-free rate. It should be below every other competing system for a reason. And I think right now there's very few alternatives. So if you want to, you know, earn interest on Augur, you know, there's very few opportunities to do so besides Compound. Or if you want to earn interest on, you know, 0x, there's very few opportunities to do so besides Compound. And so I think rates will increase as demand and the uses of them increase. You know, if suddenly there becomes this, you know, massive market of trading using the 0x token for governance or execution, you might see people, you know, borrowing instead of purchasing 0x, and that might be a forced increase to interest rates. But right now, I think there are actually relatively natural equilibriums. You know, it's a recognition that there's, you know, not too much natural demand to borrow these assets yet.
Makes a lot of sense. And yeah, what you said is very important. I mean, obviously kind of a finance term, but the risk-free rate is going to be low because essentially you're lending out your assets for no risk. And as kind of credit systems come onto Ethereum and things like that, and users can decide to maybe lend their assets out to a more risky counterparty, then those rates will start to come up. But because there's essentially no risk right now in lending out, maybe besides, you know, dApp code risk or something like that, or some kind of black swan, essentially it's risk-free. So those rates are going to be lower. And kind of on this point, we got a very interesting question on Twitter from Alex Van de Sand. And he was going to ask you, who do you think is borrowing or on the borrowing side for DAI? Currently, they're paying around 10% interest. And he was mentioning you could open a CDP, which is about 0.5% interest to take DAI out. Who do you think these people are that are paying this 10% on DAI?
Yeah, well, I think it falls into two buckets. The first are people that are actually looking to pay down maker CDPs. You know, you mentioned one specific example where a user was, you know, borrowing from Compound in order to reduce their exposure from a CDP. That's a great example. You know, if a user doesn't have excess Ether or DAI sitting around, they can't reduce their risk, you know, besides trading assets. If they don't want to trade their assets, they can borrow from the Compound protocol the assets they need, whether it's Ether or DAI, to reduce the risk of a CDP. And sometimes there's not too much rate sensitivity. You know, the liquidation fee of the Maker ecosystem is 13%, you know, even if you just dip below the line for a short amount of time. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of people that would pay a 10% interest rate to prevent, you know, a 13% haircut to their assets. And so I think that's one natural use case. And I think the other natural use case comes from people borrowing DAI to speculate with. You know, crypto prices in general are significantly sold off from prior price points, even a few months ago. And a lot of the borrowing demand started as asset prices began declining. You know, the people who are proverbially buying the dip, you know, who don't have dry powder sitting around, they can use Compound as a source of liquidity to borrow Ether or borrow DAI and make additional purchases. And so I think, you know, the world looks very different if crypto prices are 10 times higher from here. I think there probably wouldn't be as much, you know, borrowing of DAI. I think there'd probably be more borrowing of tokens to short sell them. But I think it's just a function of what are people willing to pay for liquidity.
I fully agree with that, especially your comment about, you know, we're very far off the highs and kind of these options of borrowing DAI are coming online. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people are taking it to speculate on crypto, and it's so volatile. I mean, really, what's 10% over a year in crypto land? That's pretty much nothing. You mentioned, I wanted to go back a little bit and talk about the liquidation mechanism on Compound, because as you mentioned on Maker DAI, that's 13% haircut. How does that work on Compound if someone gets liquidated?
Yeah, we tried to design what I hope is the friendliest system possible, where we're not trying to fully close out a position. So if you borrow from Compound, you're expected to maintain 150% of the value of what you've borrowed in collateral. If and when you go below that threshold, the community is really, you know, at this point, it's mostly, you know, hedge funds running bots, as it appears. But the community is able to repay what you've borrowed and seize a small amount of your collateral in exchange. But instead of completely closing out the position, like a CDP, they simply can repay an amount that returns you to the collateral requirement. So if you have to maintain 150% of what you've borrowed and you go below that line, somebody can repay a portion of what you've borrowed and take a portion of your collateral in a quantity that returns you to 150% collateralization. So, you know, you might see only a very small portion of your loan being closed when you go below this threshold. And when that happens, you know, the liquidator receives your collateral at a 5% discount. So it's just a small discount to the market price. We believe it's enough of an incentive to incentivize arbitrageurs. So far, we've seen it functioning beautifully, pretty much exactly as expected. You know, as soon as a loan goes below, you know, that threshold, it generally gets liquidated. And it seems to work pretty well. We're happy with the preliminary results.
That's really cool. Yeah, it sounds like a unique mechanism, and there's so many different ways you can kind of handle that, the liquidation logic. So it's really nice to see different mechanisms coming online. And going back to kind of comparing Compound to Maker, obviously one of the things right now that Compound has, I would say, a competitive advantage on is that you guys have multiple assets. So as you mentioned, you have 0x, you have REP, you have DAI, you have Ether. Soon, multi-collateral DAI is coming out, where people are going to be able to post collateral on CDPs other than Ether to draw DAI. Do you kind of see this as, I would say, I guess, a competitor to Compound, or do you still see the two products as complementary no matter what?
In essence, I mean, I do think they're extremely complementary products. And I think, you know, on a forward-looking basis, you know, it's really exciting to see how the community is tying these two protocols together. I do think that there's, you know, right now, a lot of the demand is to borrow DAI. You know, we offer the ability to borrow other assets, to borrow Ether, to borrow tokens, to borrow assets to use in their native protocols. You know, I'm really excited to watch people, you know, borrow 0x for governance decisions or borrow Augur, you know, to participate in prediction markets. But I definitely think that they are, in some sense, overlapping when it comes to the DAI asset. You know, there should be an interest rate equilibrium there eventually. Once both systems support all of the same assets, you know, you would think that eventually people will borrow from Compound until the interest rate equals that of Maker, and people will borrow from Maker, you know, as a default. And so it'll be really interesting to watch the two play together once they go multi-collateral. And that's just for the DAI asset. You know, I think long term, you know, people are going to use Compound to borrow other assets, possibly using, you know, DAI as the source of liquidity to borrow other assets. It'll be really great to watch this unfold.
Yeah, definitely. I'm excited to see when both have multiple assets, how that works. And multi-collateral DAI will definitely be a unique experiment as well. I will say, I think one of the things you guys have potentially number one in the entire dApp space, in my opinion, is the user experience. I've used it before. It was a little very tempting when the DAI rate was that high. So I kind of got my feet wet and jumped in there. And it's so easy. I mean, it's literally two button clicks. And my favorite thing about it is that your interest counts up right in front of you basically every second because it's continuously compounding. Is that something that you guys really focused on?
It is. You know, the user experience is extremely important to us. You know, there's, you know, it's kind of like the open joke of the system is that like all dApps are impossible to use for normal people. And that's true. Like even Compound is difficult to use if you're not, you know, experienced in Ethereum or how, you know, Ethereum accounts and addresses work or how, you know, Web3 interfaces like MetaMask work. You know, it's one of the best in the world, but it's still not good enough. It's still not at the point where, you know, my friends who have never, you know, been to Etherscan would know how to use Compound. And so we're constantly striving to make it easier and easier to use. You know, I hope that over time there's more tools and interfaces built on top of our protocol that don't even feel like crypto. You know, our dream is that eventually, you know, people are earning interest on assets and they don't even know that, you know, Compound is powering it on the back end. And I think we have a long way to go until it's completely usable. You know, right now we've spent a lot of time, you know, focused on usability, but I still think we have just so far to go.
Definitely. Yeah, I truly don't think, well, there's three things in my opinion that Ethereum needs to get mainstream. That is privacy, because we were just talking, as great as it is to be able to kind of track transactions, there's a huge problem with that because you can barely share your Ethereum address with someone unless you've totally started a new one and cleansed it from maybe an exchange and sending tokens in from there. You can barely share because of the privacy aspect. We obviously need scalability and then user experience as well. And I fully agree with what you just said. I mean, I think to truly go mainstream, people will have to, and I think we'll get there, be using decentralized applications without even knowing about it. And that also includes hiding things like gas costs and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's so many different ways to approach that. You know, I've seen so many teams taking so many different approaches that I'm optimistic. I know there's a lot of people working on this. You know, I just can't wait for it to arrive sooner.
Absolutely. So one thing I talk actually about a lot of guests with, it seems to come up a lot because they're required in pretty much any dApp that's out there, are oracles. So basically you need some kind of feed. I always use kind of the basic example of if you had a bet with someone and it was, is Apple stock going to be over $200 by the end of 2020? How do you settle that bet, right? You need something that feeds in that says, okay, this person won or not. Where that comes into play on something like Compound is you guys obviously need some type of price feed that goes into your mechanism, which can liquidate and then kind of know if these positions are above or below the required collateral. Can you talk a little bit how the Oracle system works on Compound, and do you see it as a centralized point of failure? And if so, are you working on ways to decentralize this a little bit better?
Yeah, that's a great question. So pretty much every team in crypto has built some version of their own Oracle system. Compound just needs an accurate price that's not able to be manipulated. And when I say manipulated, it means that it can't be so fully on-chain accessible that a user could, you know, adjust the price through a trade, interact with Compound, and then adjust the price again. So, you know, if we used an on-chain DEX, for instance, as the price oracle, it would actually open the protocol up to some really weird edge case risks where people do things in one block. And then unwind them and, you know, interact with the protocol. But, you know, we're not the only team that's worried about this. There's, you know, dozens and hundreds of teams that are thinking about oracles. And, you know, we've designed our protocol to fetch prices from an oracle address. And the idea is that eventually we don't want to be in the business of maintaining an oracle. You know, we expect that the community will band together to solve this in some way. And it just seems like such a trivial problem, and yet everyone struggles with it. And so, you know, as the community develops better Oracle systems that are, you know, open source, trusted, and, you know, have integrity, we'll absolutely switch our protocol over to them. And it's designed to upgrade to the latest and greatest protocol system. Our protocol today fetches the price of DAI from Maker's price Oracle system. And, you know, we post asset prices for the other assets, which is a centralized point of failure. And we would love this to be decentralized and outside of our control.
Yeah, it's kind of been a classic problem all the way back to, you know, 2014. Essentially, people have been talking about this. It seems like we're making some progress, and I'm sure everyone will kind of agree on a single or a couple solutions at some point. But it's definitely an interesting thing because, like you mentioned, if something goes awry there, kind of the whole system could potentially melt down, and especially on the Maker side as well. I mean, I know it's not kind of a single point of failure, but it's not truly decentralized yet. And I saw they're kind of talking about finding ways to do that. So that would be a nice breakthrough.
Yeah, nobody is fully decentralized yet. You know, my wild card favorite right now, just in terms of, you know, long term, is Gnosis has created DutchX, which I think could be a very valid price feed long term, because it's sort of like a market executing price that's not manipulatable instantaneously. So I think that's a really exciting system.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. I actually just released an episode with Martin last week, and we talked about that and oracles and DutchX. So if people haven't listened to that yet, I would highly recommend. It was a great episode. So, you know, obviously I mentioned Compound didn't do an ICO. You don't have a token. So I'm sure people are kind of curious, you know, how you either make money now or plans to make money in the future. Kind of what is the plan for that? And do you take some kind of cut on fees on every transaction that happens on Compound?
Yeah, that's a great question. So while Compound doesn't directly take a fee, a small amount of the interest of the protocol is not paid out to suppliers, and it's retained by the protocol. So every dollar of interest that is paid by borrowers, 90 cents of it is paid to the suppliers of the asset. And, you know, 10 cents is retained by the protocol. Long term, you know, over a course of, you know, time, this provides a small amount of additional stability to the protocol. You know, in the event of, you know, a black swan event where there's an illiquid asset, it does provide a cushion where it essentially suffers the first loss. And the idea is that eventually, you know, in the extremely long term, you know, assuming it was done transparently and with good reason, you know, we as a company could withdraw those assets as, you know, our own fee. It's still yet to be decided, though. In a lot of ways, we haven't, you know, really spent time thinking about the when, how, why, what of, you know, earning income from the protocol, just because the scope is so small still. You know, Compound only launched a few months ago, and you know, today there's about $22 million of assets in the protocol. You know, as a, you know, as an entity that, you know, is even collecting the, you know, a small amount of interest on AUM, that's not very much. It's not enough that it's going to pay anyone's rent yet. So, you know, it's still early, and, you know, I think this will evolve. And I think, you know, over time, we're going to refine our thinking about how to make money as the developers of this. But we're also blessed in that we, you know, raised a sizable enough seed round that we don't have to worry about monetization yet. You know, we have, as a organization that's building the protocol, 3 years of runway, even in this crypto winter. And so, you know, we're not forced to, you know, prematurely try to monetize the protocol.
That sounds good. Yeah. And, you know, it's my kind of opinion. It's better at this stage to get out there and become a staple in your niche or your area. And then in my opinion, the money or profit's going to find you at a point, right? So it's at this point, just kind of get out there, get working, become established and go from there. So that's cool to hear. I definitely agree with that strategy. And it's nice that you guys have a lot of runway as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. So that's obviously the current state of Compound and where things are at today. Are you currently planning to add or modify the current application, and what are kind of your plans moving into the future now?
Yeah. So, you know, we haven't spent too much time talking about this publicly. For members of the community that hang out in our Discord, we've been, you know, lightly alluding to what we're calling the second version of Compound. And so I'm happy to start talking about it a little bit more, but we're planning to launch a complete replacement of the protocol, ideally in, you know, 3 to 4 months, where we're going to launch an entirely second version of Compound using all of the lessons learned by operating the protocol in the wild for the last 4 months. And the idea is that we're going to upgrade the risk model so that illiquid assets create less risk for the protocol and, you know, create more upgradability of the underlying systems. And so, you know, we're going to be going through a major upgrade process. We, you know, have just finalized what we're referring to as version 1.0 of our white paper. Up until this point, we've always been in the 0. Versions of our white paper. We're right now just finally finishing up what we are basically thinking about as a permanent protocol, and one that we hope will last, you know, 100 years, that has yet to be deployed. And, you know, if we build everything correctly, you know, this will be the final version of the on-chain implementation.
Cool, cool. Yeah, I think that's some breaking news there on Into the Ether.
That is breaking news.
Compound V2, that's cool. That's nice to hear. I'm excited to check that out. So definitely kind of keep everybody posted on the progress there. I'm sure people will want to jump all over that. So, you know, I think that's a great view of now the past, present, and future of Compound itself. I kind of wanted to transition a little bit while I had you. Obviously, you're heavy into the open finance space, and I wanted to talk just a little bit more general about that. Did the popularity of open finance surprise you in 2018? My assumption is probably not, since you were building something like Compound, but it seems to have completely taken over the narrative of Ethereum last year.
Yeah, I'm actually delightfully surprised that open finance has started becoming, you know, more of a conversation item, that there's more attention being paid to it. When we started, you know, building, you know, what I would call an open finance building block, the focus of the community was sort of in the opposite direction. It was in essentially ICOs and, you know, people just rushing to ship things that didn't necessarily, you know, create much value. Whereas open finance is about, you know, building extremely useful applications that the community can extend and build upon and combine in interesting new ways. Just the basic building blocks of a more long-term focused, you know, Ethereum-based financial ecosystem. And it's really great to see people starting to pay more attention to it. And I actually think that, you know, the velocity of things being built in the open finance space is going to increase, which is going to have benefits for pretty much everybody there today. You know, it actually has a network effect where, you know, a lot of things that were happening in crypto didn't really have a network effect. It was just lots of teams running around, you know, doing their own thing. And the value of each of these open finance components actually increases as there's more of a focus on it. So it's extremely exciting. It's best time in the world to join the open finance movement. If you're listening and you're an engineer or, you know, interested in the space, you know, now's a phenomenal time to get involved.
Fully agree with that. I think it's going to explode moving forward, and we're going to look back at 2018 and kind of laugh at, we thought it was a big movement, but I think it's just going to move up exponentially at this point. And I'm personally very excited to see this narrative take over in Ethereum in 2018. It's honestly what got me first excited about Ethereum back in, you know, 2015, was this idea of programmable money and open finance. I think we got a little bit distracted by the Web3 narrative at a point, so I'm glad we're kind of shifting back to this, at least until full scaling solutions are in place. Because the nice thing about open finance is it really doesn't rely on scalability too much. I mean, it would be nice, but unless you're a DEX, but other than that, you don't really need too much high volume of transactions.
No, what I love about it is, you know, we need very little throughput on Compound. You know, the application or the protocol, as you use it, you interact with it and then you don't interact with it until you need to again. You can supply assets and then come back in 6 months. And that whole time has been working. You've been earning interest. You know, you don't have to interact with it every block or every day. You can participate as you choose. And, you know, it works great even in a low scalability environment, just as a logic layer. And, you know, I think open finance is going to continue to thrive.
Absolutely. So, you know, that's kind of talking about the state of open finance, as it were, last year. And, you know, on this episode so far, we've actually touched on a couple of things that we think we still need. And a question came in on Twitter from Michael, and he works at MyCrypto. And he was asking, in your opinion, what other open finance products do you think are missing from the ecosystem at this moment to kind of push it to the next stage?
That's a great question. There's so many products that are missing. You know, we're at such an early chapter in open finance that we're still at the phase of really experimenting with different building blocks. You know, some of the best products and protocols to come out, in my opinion, you know, excluding Compound, are things like 0x and DYDX. And, you know, everyone's playing around right now, and it's still an extremely experimental phase. You know, I think there's 10 times as many products that haven't been even created yet than exist today. It's just so early.
Yeah, I think one of the things, and we touched on it a bit, but having true identity, a true credit system, and underwriting. And I know Dharma's working on the underwriting side, which eventually will kind of lead to credit and potentially eventually identity as well. I kind of see those as being the items that'll truly push us into kind of a worldwide reaching financial system.
Yeah. And the dream of this is that, you know, no matter where you live in the world, you know, you can participate in this new system. And, you know, I think the products that are going to win long term are the ones that open up new tools for people who haven't interacted with finance before, you know, that haven't necessarily interacted with even simple products like savings or loans or credit or derivatives, you know, or whatever it might be. You know, it's truly exciting. You know, we just have to remember that, you know, most people in the world are not developers who are extremely, you know, crypto native, and that we have to build products that are truly designed for everybody.
Yeah, there's always going to be a couple shortfalls on the decentralized aspect, so you got to make sure you make up for that with very similar user experience and things like that. Definitely agreed. Well, Robert, I think this has been a fantastic conversation. I've personally really enjoyed talking. What's the best way for people to follow you or interact with the Compound community?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter. My handle is rleschner or Compound Finance. But we love having people join our Discord. You can ask us anything. You can, you know, critique our white paper. You know, we love having people just chat with us. We try to be an extremely transparent team. And, you know, we'd love for people just to get involved, to read the source code of Compound, to try to poke holes in it, just to get engaged with our community, and ideally to build new interfaces or products on top of Compound. You know, we allow any developer to embed interest rates into a smart contract, and that's really cool. So if you're interested in open finance, Compound Finance is the place to be.
Sounds great. Well, thanks a lot for joining Into the Ether.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. Talk soon.
Thanks for listening to the Into the Ether podcast. You can subscribe to us at podcast.ethub.io, as well as follow us on Twitter at econoar and at zazzle0x.